How do you know if you need him or not?
She'll ask you.
Oh, I didn't get a call.
Right. We may need you. Well, you get called last next call. Time, Bredeman. We call selectively around here. Okay, Catherine, I'm not clear. 273 relating to witnesses. Oh, goodness sake. Witness fees. We probably sent them away too soon.
Do you want me to call back? Just go bubble.
Maybe we could do an informal polling process.
I know. Yeah. 273 deals with witness fees and increasing witness fees. The bar is worked out. Remember, we had the District Attorneys Association here agreeing to the amendments. And the amendments are now LC-2.
273.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait. Yeah, I'll move.
We sent you away too soon. This has to do with witness fees. Senate Bill 273-2, Catherine.
This bill increases the fees in cases where there is the public body is not a party, in cases where it is not a criminal case, from $5 to $30 for the witness fee. Civil cases witness fee would be raised to $30. Mileage in those cases would be raised from 8 cents to 25 cents per mile. The amendments basically redraft the bill. There was some problems dividing all of the witnesses up either to civil or criminal, and they've been redrafted with one subsection referring to civil fees and a second one for non civil cases, and the language is specifically criminal proceedings prosecuted by a public body, and that apparently applies to out-of-state support enforcement situations. And then also, when the public body is a party, there would be no increased fee. Those would include both tort cases and administrative law cases.
And if you recall, we had a fair amount of discussion with respect to this. I don't know if Bob Olson is here. We had people work session only. But if you have information on someone, that you'd like to have someone share information, I'm happy to call them up.
We are exempting, as I understand, the witness fees for criminal proceedings, correct?
That's correct.
I thought I heard that. Right. I think it's in the bill, the amended bill.
Okay.
We also had a set of -1 amendments which were brought in by the parole board. These amendments, the -2, incorporate their concern that they would be labeled as a criminal agency.
Madam Chair, I'd move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 273.
Senator Hill has moved -2 amendments to Senate Bill 273. Are there objections? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 273 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved Senate Bill 273 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please. Kiska.
No.
Rothman.
Aye.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Jennifer.
Aye.
Brenner.
Aye.
Collins. Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. That should be it. Oh. Representative Calhoun is here about a bill that deals with 685. take that out of order for a moment, and we'll excuse members. 685 deals with the spotlight bill. We'll do him the courtesy of giving us Ann, Representative. So I'm sorry I didn't see you out there, but I get my.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Bernie Calhoun.
Oh, that's supposed to come out or not?
Thank you. Jack.
Get a spot here.
Sorry, we've got to change our counsel in order to take you out of order.
Senate Bill.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Senate Bill 685 is the spotlighting bill that the members will recall we dealt with a short time ago. There was some discussion of whether the bill should be in the section of the statutes that it was. There is an amendment, 685-2, that I'll pass out to the members now. The amendment, among other things, makes violation of the new spotlighting statute a violation. It also adds into the list of weapons a crossbow, because we felt that that was sort of an overlooked omission. And adds the prohibitions in the measure to Chapter 166, which, among other things, deals with discharging weapons. The reason for it being in that chapter rather than in the hunting statutes is, was because the sponsors of the bill intended this to serve as an aid to law enforcement dealing with people's persons who shoot shots at signs and that type of thing, in addition to animals.
Okay. Would you like to comment?
Thank you,
Senator Nakawai. Representative Calhoun and Representative Soa.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Ernie Calhoun, District 50, Medford. I think that your amendments are, in essence, what is my House Bill 3490.
And that's correct.
I just want to testify in support and say that I had heard from some of my hunting people downstate and other people up here that they were having some difficulties, so we took the initiative to try to make certain we got the right language, and I'm just happy to be able to work with Senator Grensky on this effort and getting everybody satisfied and happy and get this thing taken care of so we can get on to other tasks this session. That's about all I have. As I know, the Oregon hunters are happy with this language, the police are happy with it, and miscellaneous other groups and persons from our local area.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I was involved in 1973 when we recodified the game code, and it was very difficult at that time for everybody to come to an agreement on how we should word the part of the statute that has to do with hunting with a light. And we finally came to a compromise, and that language has stood the test of time and has worked very well. However, there's other things, as this bill addresses, that have to do with illegal activities. And as the bill was originally presented, would make it fairly unworkable. And we've come to agreement with all parties that the wording that's in Representative Calhoun's bill that that you have before you is the words that will give the state police the leeway to apprehend violators and still not conflict with the wildlife statutes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jack.
I should add that I, in adopting these amendments, I worked with Major Hyder of the Oregon State Police Game Division, and that this is the language that they want as well.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Madam Chair, what this is the result of both myself and Representative Calhoun, and I think the Oregon Hunters Association all had the same idea, but I wasn't doing it the same way everyone else was. And the idea was to get this thing taken care of. Technically, the amendment will provide, I think, a better vehicle, which is why I think it's a good idea to. The bill over on the House side, which is virtually identical, does have the support of the Oregon Hunters Association, and this would be, I understand, enforceable from the Oregon State Police standpoint as well.
So. I'm assuming that when it gets over the House, you have all sorts of people who want to stand up and add their names to the sponsors, so I just want to let you know that that's possible. I'm assuming that you're still able to do that under the House rules. So, Senator Hill.
Where is the House bill? What happened?
They sent it, the Speaker sent it down to Ag. The Ag Committee on the House side. So it's sitting down in Ag right now, but if we have the bill moving over here, I don't have any desire to move the bill over there whatsoever, so we can just get this one over. Hopefully they send it over to judiciary so we can make sure that it gets out, because everybody knows we move all the bills on the judiciary committee outside.
Madam Chair, I'd move the...
We're thankful for that.
I'd move the dash two amendments to...
Senator Grinsky, moving dash two amendments to Senate Bill 685. Are there objections? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 685 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Grinsky moves Senate Bill 685 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please, Kiska.
Brennan?
Aye.
Grinsky?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Jamaica?
Aye.
Bringer?
Collins? Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much, Senator Grinsky. We'll move the bill. Carry it. Okay, let's go back to Catherine's list then for a while, so that Catherine can get on her way.
You have my complete
home.
Thank you.
She's here. She's on the way.
Yeah, good. A lot of people, they get beat by the other party on a bill, but the bill was beating me in this case.
Thank you.
We're glad you took care of it nicely. In fine style. We're going to take up 1072, which is the last one on the agenda, or at least lower down on the agenda today. But this bill has come to compromise and resolution, and has to do with docketing liens of record, among other things. And who do we have here to go through?
Elizabeth Stocktaylor is here.
Great. This is our civil penalty bill.
Yes.
Excuse me, I was not paying attention. Elizabeth.
Yes, ma'am. Elizabeth Stocktaylor, Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Justice. I believe you have before you a set of amendments labeled SB 1072-3.
And I want to interrupt you and remind Senator Shoemaker that this was in response to one of your questions, which has to do with executing the order of warrant. And you'll see that on page 2, that's amendments that were made.
Okay.
They were, if my mind is recalling appropriately,
that was in
response to your question, and they have brought it back fixed.
Good. Good. All right.
Elizabeth.
Thank you. As you recall, the purpose of the bill originally was to permit recording of orders assessing civil penalties in the county clerk lien record, which had been the original design of the county clerk lien record, but hadn't been fully carried out in the statutes. The bill also provided for a specific burden on state agencies to release or satisfy liens that were created by recording of their orders or warrants, provided a mechanism to renew an order or warrant that had been docketed in the judgment docket before 1983, which is the year in which the county clerk lien record was created, to be renewed into the county clerk lien record, then also provided for an attempt to provide a standard procedure for the hearing process before assessment of civil penalties. I met with Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council, Karen Hightower from the Court Administrator's Office, to work through some problems that the Court Administrator's Office had raised in a letter, which I believe is in your file, and the dash three amendments respond to those concerns. They also respond to two specific suggestions that were made by Senator Shoemaker that to help clarify some of the language that had originally been put in the bill. Looking at the amendments then on the first page, we are adding to the bill ORS 205-125 and making some amendments to that section to pull the language that deals with the characteristics and qualities of a recorded order or warrant into one part of the statute, into Chapter 205, which governs the county clerk lien record. And as you can see at lines 21 and 22 on the first page of the amendments, we are clearly describing the order or warrant, once it is recorded, has the same effect as a judgment entered in the register and docketed in the judgment docket of the circuit court in that county in which it's recorded from the date of recording. The statute had already provided for creation of a lien, allowing for renewal and enforcement of the order or warrant, writs of execution, notices of garnishment, and writs of garnishment. On the second page of the proposed amendments, a new subsection 3 was added with the idea that it would clearly establish that the lien is upon any interest in real property. Senator Shoemaker, this responds to your suggestions for improvement in the language of the original bill, of the person in the county where the order or warrant is recorded. So if an agency wants to get a lien against property that's in some other county, then it must go to that other county and record there also. We deleted the language on lines 4 through 8 on page 2 at the request of the court administrator's office. They expressed a substantial amount of concern of the role of the court, it not being specified anywhere in the statute, in enforcing and providing execution on these orders and warrants. And the understanding has been all along that we are not solving all of the problems that relate to enforcement of civil penalties, and that some work is going to need to be done during the interim to determine the role and function of the courts in providing enforcement of civil penalties. With that understanding, the court administrator's office has signed off on these amendments. And the kinds of things that we will need to look at in the interim, if you do pursue that, is a standard procedure for providing notice, hearing, or opportunity for hearing, and judicial review of the assessment of the penalty itself, and then the manner in which the amounts can be collected, whether it's going to be through judicial process, through writ of garnishment, sheriff's sale, or whatever, depending upon the amount of the penalty. So those kinds of processes are not provided.
I want to stop you right now to remind people this bill applies to agencies who are now issuing civil penalties, and it tries to bring them into some uniform conformance here. So we're really only talking about civil penalties that deal with agencies.
Yes.
Isn't that correct?
That's
and,
correct.
They are scattered around individually every little statute. This is the first step to try
pull
to bring
them all
some
together.
Bring some conformity and uniformity and make sure that they're actually executable in a way that makes sense. So there are lots of things that we're not touching, some of which we may not want to touch in terms of leaving flexibility with the agencies. So that's where we are.
If I could give an example.
Good.
There are some agencies that have the authority, I believe DEQ is one, to levy very significant penalties for violations of the environmental laws. Under the current statutes, those penalties have to be assessed using a much more rigorous process and judicial review than is normal for an APA-type agency, probably because of the magnitude of the penalty. We have not touched those statutes. The change that is this boilerplate change that's being made in a significant number of statutes can be found on the third page of the draft amendments, the bold-faced language at the bottom of the page. The statutes that we selected to include in these amendments were those that referred to the judgment docket statutes in error. And if you look at the language that's being deleted on lines 18 through 24, you'll see a reference to ORS 18320 to 18370. Those statutes relate to judgments and recording them or docketing them in the judgment docket and the effect of a docketed judgment, and they are not directly applicable to the state agency civil penalty orders. So we have picked up those statutes, corrected those references because they in essence directed an agency to do something that it could not do. And provided the reference to the county clerk lien record. But there still are statutes out there that refer to docketing a civil penalty order, and there are statutes that don't talk at all about where it can go once it's been issued. And those are the kinds of things that need to be dealt with during the interim in another fairly large bill, I'm afraid, because there are a lot of sections. But this gets through the worst of the problems, clearly establishes what happens or what the effect of recording that civil penalty order is in the county clerk lien record. It's those burdens on the agencies to affirmatively act to release or satisfy if they're paid, and provides the mechanism for renewing the order into the county clerk lien record and establishing a paper trail so that, say, if a title company or someone else is searching the record and starts in the judgment docket, finds a docketed order or warrant, there will be a notation there if it's been renewed into the county clerk lien record so that that trail is complete.
Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
So, I think you answered my question, but I want to make sure about this. When a judgment's entered in the circuit court, is it transferred over to the county clerk's office and it's shown as a lien there?
Senator Grinsky, I believe that as a result of the title company legislation that was passed last session, a judgment may be recorded in the county clerk lien record in order to create a lien.
Generally, or at least it wasn't until that act then.
I think that's correct.
But this language says it will be recorded in the county clerk of the county of the state and will have the same effect as a judgment in circuit court.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm wondering is title companies don't generally, well, maybe they do. They probably do. But I know they go up to the clerk of the court and go through the judgment dockets in order to find the recorded judgments for liens on real property.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going to look through the county clerk's records in order to find additional liens from these civil penalties, which will have the same effect as a judgment in circuit court.
That's correct, Senator.
But they're going to be looking at two different places now, aren't they?
The history of this started in 83 when the court administrator at that time wanted very much to get these kinds of documents out of the judgment docket because they had not been generated by the courts. There was no court file.
Right.
So the lien record was set up. Then last session, the title companies came forward with legislation seeking to have all documents moved now into the lien record. So there's provision in the law for moving the judgments into the lien record so that the lien record will be the only place that the title companies have to go. For a time, they're going to have to go both places because things that happened before the effective date of that legislation are already completed, and so there are still things in the judgment docket that do create liens. But I believe the goal of that legislation was to move eventually everything into the county clerk lien record so there would be one place where liens on real property would appear of record.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Elizabeth? I do want to thank you very much for working so hard on to gather things together.
I would move the -3 amendments.
Right. Senator Shoemaker has moved -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1072. Catherine, do we need anything else to be? This takes care of the appropriate amount of amendments that we need before that.
Yes, Senator. -3 with the typed-in changes that are on the first two pages is a complete set of amendments.
Are there objections to Senator Shoemaker's motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
And I'll move the bill as amended to the floor of the defense recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Shoemaker has moved Senate Bill 1072 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay. Catherine, are we finished with you?
Yes, sir.
Jack.
This would be a good one for you to carry.
I'm going to carry this one myself.
Oh, that's good.
I've been working on it. I'll
it could be, it could be dangerous.
I'll do this one.
Okay. See, this isn't the same as Labor Committee, Senator Grinsky. Just moving a bill to the Judiciary Committee doesn't necessarily mean that you have to carry that
rascal
on the floor.
Right, that's true. This will be actually my pleasure.
Anytime I vote for something in Labor, I end up carrying it.
No. That's not true.
Well, it doesn't leave you with very many bills to carry.
That's right.
Well.
Okay. Let's see. We're going to start right down the list, Senate Bill 123.
Senate Bill 123 is a bill with a little bit of history. It's at the request of the parole board.
We sent that to the floor at one point. It's now back.
And there are amendments?
And there are amendments.
And we'll give those to
you. The parole board has been around to 288. Where is 288?
Right above 123 on the list.
Oh, yeah, it's off, I guess. Oh, excuse me, 288, yes, 288 is off because the, 288 and 247 are off because amendments are not ready. They're still in conflict. Debating. So you can cross those off for today. They'll be on tomorrow.
And you have before you the amendments that are... have been through LC 123-1. Mr. Foss from the parole board is here if you have any questions. Basically what these amendments do is just keep the present status quo, and they repeal the sunset provision that we've been discussing for some time now.
Okay, Vern, you want to come up and at least be... It is something that the bill passed last session, giving you this authority. You have been operating under it, had a sunset. You're asking us to remove the sunset. Anything further?
No, I think I'm Vern Fotz, Chairman of the Board of Parole. Madam Chair, that's all. It's a very simple, I've said this before, straightforward.
I'm going to leave you alone.
I was looking at Senator Shoemaker when I said that. He's heard these words. I have talked with members of this committee and other members of the Senate, and as you know, there were objections to 123 as we proposed it. Many felt they could not support it. Those that I have talked with have indicated to me that this is an acceptable compromise, and it's one that is certainly acceptable to us.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could you remind me of what the difference is between the amendments, the proposed amendments in the bill as originally proposed in substance?
Well, Senator Shoemaker, this bill before you now, the amended Senate Bill 123, which basically says that we'll stay with the existing statute, is a way of summing consecutive sentences and addressing the setting of prison terms. And it says, in effect, that if a crime is on the list, one of the crimes on the list, then every crime in a consecutive sentence has to be considered, considering criminal history, thus making it the longest possible range. The proposal we had before you in the original Senate Bill 123 was that only the crimes on the list would be considered.
Now they all will be considered.
Now if a crime is on the list, and let's say the second or third or fourth crime in the consecutive sentence structure is not one of those listed crimes, they all are considered under the criminal history, or their criminal history is considered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brock.
And I know you came and spoke to us on this, but let me just recollect here, if I might. Originally, is this the one that in the matrix moved subsequent activities up to the list that put you in with the good guys? Is this the one? Because there were two of them that were very much the same.
There were three. Yeah. There was the original, which said that every crime had to be, the criminal history had to be considered. Then the one that we're looking at right now is in the middle. And then the one that we had originally proposed in Senate Bill 23 was the one that said that was a softer version, basically, and that was unacceptable.
And this gets all that stuff out of there that did have the problems?
I think so. Yes, it does.
Madam Chair?
Senator Grinsky.
I understand that I basically think I know what these amendments are supposed to do. What I'm wondering is, why don't we just repeal the sunset on House Bill 33? What was it?
Well, that, excuse me. Senator Grinsky, I think that is basically the proposal we're making here, that we're repealing the sunset on the existing statute, which was House Bill 3384.
It's now Chapter 634 of Oregon Laws 87.
Why can't we just say that, then, instead of saying we will use the method set forth in this? Why don't we just say the sunset provision in Section 4, Chapter 634, Oregon Laws 87, is hereby repealed? Why didn't we just do it that way? Any particular reason?
I can't, Senator Grinsky, I can't respond to that. I'll ask Cindy Burgess, who helped draft the original bill, if she can respond to that better than I.
Well, she may know better than I, but we don't enter these into the gray book if they're statutory. If they have a sunset, they go into the statute laws, the session laws, and they don't get entered. So there's really, you have to go back and amend the session law and bring it into the full statute in order to do that. If you repealed the sunset, it would have to be moved in, and Jack would know better than I, but there is some technical reason for why you have to amend the session law. Maybe we can actually get the repealer language that you want in a different...
Well,
I'm not suggesting we can't do it.
...63160, and that intent of that is to bring in the assault force statute. So juvenile is affected by crimes which, if committed by an adult, would constitute a felony or assault in the fourth degree. It was drafted this way for purposes of clarity. I'm not sure that worked as well as I had hoped, but this is simply a modification of one of the amendments that has already been passed, and that was Corey Streisinger's amendment to bring in the assault force statute.
Madam Chair, then as compared to the -2 amendments, I suppose we're proposing to substitute the -4 amendments to a portion of the -2 amendments appearing between line 8 and line 17. Am I correct? So when we move these amendments, we don't want to move both of those in, or we have...
I think it's consistent to move both, Senator. It's simply that this is, in fact, a modification of the language in the -2 amendment.
Okay. If that's fine, I have a problem.
And then finally, the -5 amendment is really, after all this, the heart of the bill in some respects, and this sets the limitations on how long a child can be held in custody. If you'll recall, we had some lengthy discussion about this. 28 days, if good cause exists, then an additional 28 days. And that's the limit, unless the adjudication is continued with the express consent of the child.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, the express consent. We ended up with the wording "express consent of the child" rather than "variety thereof of protectors or lawyers or whatever."
Madam Chair, I think Corey Streisinger, for the record, Governor Goldschmidt's legal counsel, I think the feeling of the committee and then later when we got together to draft it was that this, ordinarily, the child is presumed to be able to make decisions of this sort and that this paralleled other provisions in the juvenile code.
I do remember our discussion with it about who charged with this and who was... So you all are satisfied then that we have the bill in order to be moved tonight?
Yes, Madam Chair, we are.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm just puzzled about one point. When we talk about the express consent of the child, if the child is a guardian, would that then mean the express consent of the guardian of the child?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, if the child is appearing through another party, then the other party who makes decisions for the child would have the authority to make those decisions.
Okay.
In the same fashion, Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, if the child is appearing through an attorney, but those persons would be acting on behalf of the child, not independently.
And the child in this circumstance virtually always is represented by counsel?
Yes. Further questions?
Satisfies me.
Well, the chair would move -562, the -2 amendments, dated 4/26/89, the -3 amendments, dated 4/26/89, the -4 amendments dated 4/26/89, and the -5 amendments dated 4/26/89. And again, it would be my with a proviso that we double check and make sure that we are, in fact, with the -4 amendment language, not replicating, duplicating, or causing confusion of what we have listed in the -2 amendments. And I'll ask Jack to double check that in a technical way, make sure that we're not coming up with something that doesn't make sense. So okay. With that proviso, I'll move those amendments. Other objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay.
I'll move the bill.
Thank you. Senator Shoemaker.
The floor to pass with all amendments.
Senator Shoemaker, move Senate Bill 562 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Brockman? Aye.
Bill?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Senator Gransky, we're just moving Senate Bill 562, if you'd like to be recorded.
As amended?
As amended with 5 amendments and all intact and no, with all agreement.
I would vote aye on that.
Okay. Senator Gransky votes aye. The motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, we've got one bill remaining. I would like to, two bills quickly. 606.
Senate Bill 606 is the affectionately known as the hate crimes bill. There has been some discussion between primary sponsors, Senator Gold, and the ACLU. There is a set of amendments that I'm handing out now, 606-3, that is at the request of the ACLU, in which Senator Gold has authorizing me to say that she is satisfied with.
Okay. Jack, do you want to go through the amendments, or do you have someone else to go through the amendments?
Well, Stevie Remington is here. Briefly, this is simply a new approach to dealing with the same problem. You'll recall that this bill is intended to establish a method whereby statistics on crimes motivated by prejudice or bigotry can be complied. This bill gives directive to the executive department to compile those statistics and to publish an annual report on the same.
Okay, we better talk about the amendments and make sure people come up.
Okay.
Senator Shoemaker, I remember, had some questions at one point.
Should mention the gentleman that's the head of LEDS is here as well.
Well,
Senator Gransky.
Looks like they've deleted some stuff here. Am I looking at the right? What are we at here? 1815?
The -3 amendments. And as I said, this is a new approach, and perhaps since it was suggested by Stevie Remington, the head of the ACLU, perhaps it would be best to let her expand on these if that's needed.
It looks like we're amending a different section than we were.
No, that's correct.
Which isn't even on the original bill.
That's correct. This is a complete replacement amendment.
Oh, it's a complete replacement. All right, thank you.
Well, I think we ought to have Stevie come up and we ought to have, we need to have a discussion about what the difference is and why we're looking at a different section. And Mr. Smith is here from otherwise known as LEDS, but the executive department, the executive department more specifically.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, a question was raised to me after the public hearing as to whether the ACLU had any concern about confidentiality of reports. And I must confess, that's the first time I really got the bill out and read it. And I was startled to find that it didn't do at all what I think most of, nearly everyone expected it to do. It was drafted to amend the criminal offender information that is collected at the time of arrest, along with fingerprints and so on, and sent to the state police, but as a part of the criminal offender records, which meant that there would be no report if there were no arrest. And I checked with other members who were supporting this bill, and everyone, no one realized that, and all agreed that what we were after were all the reports of crime, whether or not an arrest is made, that there was a crime motivated by this. It does require some discretion, and I think the training part for the police. But then I traced down where reports of crime go, and instead of to the state police, it is the law enforcement data system. And so we just took everything out from the state police and inserted in this statute, which governs what the executive department collects and what reports they made. And we have required both that the law enforcement agencies report the crimes motivated by prejudice, et cetera. You can see the bold language, and that the executive department publish an annual report of the statistics on the incidence of crime. And that's what we really want to know, how many crimes and the gross statistics, not whether this particular offender was motivated by this. So that's the reason for the amendments.
Okay. Mr. Smith, would you like to comment? Are you understanding clearly how the flow of information would both come to you, and would it be materially different or different from what we had envisioned initially with the initial configuration of the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Lloyd Smith, the manager of LEDS in the executive department. We've looked at this, and essentially the way we would handle this would be with a supplemental kind of a report, similar to the way we handle certain homicide reports now at the time that the crime is reported. We would have to come up with a report that collects information about what kind of hate crime it was, what the target, what particular group was targeted, and possibly some information, if it's available, about the circumstances.
Madam Chair, could I ask a
quick question? Yes,
although I am one of the sponsors on this bill and support keeping track of this kind of stuff, I had a question at the time, and I have one now, about how you determine when a crime is based on perceived race, color, religion, national origin. How are you going to draw the line there? If a gang of white young men kill a black young man, is that going to necessarily be assumed to be that kind of crime? Or is there going to need to be more than that? Or just basically, how will you be making that determination?
Madam Chair, Senator Gorinsky, that's the basic issue, or one of the problems that we see with it is that definition. I think that's one of the reasons for the paragraph down in the bottom of the bill that requires the BPST to do some training. It would require essentially that a law enforcement officer or person in a law enforcement agency, when they take a crime report, be conscious of this question. And there's some decision making involved. We would again involve them in the.
We had an extensive. We had police. We had Portland police, and we had a number of police. I don't remember who else. I don't know if the sheriff signed up on it in support, but we did have at least some fair amount of law enforcement people who were willing.
They felt comfortable.
Yeah, who said that they were. We're okay by it, and I don't know how extensive, I don't recall, we can look out but we had a fairly extensive hearing and strong support from a number of parties.
It was more for my own information. Yeah. I think it's worthwhile data. And I'm sure you know this, obviously it's only as good as the accuracy through which it's compiled.
Exactly.
But that's your problem, I guess. I think it's worthwhile doing it.
Madam Chair, on that point, and I was sort of pondering this myself, I mean, this is reporting of crime upon its commission and without regard to whether there is an arrest or a trial or anything else. You don't know for sure that it's motivated by anything. In fact, you don't really even know for sure that it's a crime, I guess, if you've got a conviction, but not pausing on that. I wonder if it would be clearer here to provide that law enforcement agencies shall report to the executive department statistics concerning crimes believed by the law enforcement agency to be motivated by prejudice or suspected by the law enforcement agency. In other words, provide that standard there so that we know that that's what we're getting. We're getting reports on what they believe or suspect carry this motivation. And then when the reports come out, they also would come out that these are crimes reported that were suspected or believed to be so motivated, rather than a report of these are the crimes that were motivated by, when our database is not reliable in that regard.
Is that not covered in line 11 of the proposed amendment?
I don't think it is, because it says that an agency shall report concerning crimes motivated by prejudice.
Well, look up at line 11, though, of the amendment. It says motivated by prejudice based on the perceived.
Well, that's perceived by the perpetrator, as I read it.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. No, Jack?
That's meant to address the situation where, for instance, a gay person is attacked because the perpetrator perceived them to be gay, whether in fact, whether or not in fact they are.
Okay, so the question of believed or is still open on. Stevie, you want
I can speak only for myself at this point and not other people who support the bill, but I see no problem with that.
I almost feel like it's built in, though. I mean,
Bill,
if that, I don't see how you could otherwise read this than it's their best estimate that that's what happened.
Explicit about it. Well, let's either you have language you want to put in or you want to
yeah. I guess one thing I have a question, what is the standard we want to use? Believed by the agency, suspected by the agency?
Certainly not suspected.
I would suggest a reasonable belief.
Believed, maybe
reasonably believed.
Well, then that would be an outside standard that somebody else would have to apply. I don't think we want to get into that. So why don't we say then,
how about reasonably believed to be motivated?
Well,
how's that?
Believed by the reporting agency to be motivated by.
I guess I'm dropping off of this one, because if I call up and I say someone beat me up and I think, given the circumstances, this is what they said to me. And if you have I don't think we want the police agency to have to second guess that. And I think that's all we want them to do is write it down and make the decision. So I guess I'm not asking them to believe it. I'm just asking them to report it.
And point.
I guess that's where I am, Senator Shoemaker. I just like to leave it alone and assume that that's where we are. And if somebody calls in and says, you know, there were three thugs and the officer came by or the officer came by and he wasn't there right at the time, I still think what we want is an indicator, in the same way that we have an indicator that the Attorney General they do their annual statistics and they call up people randomly and ask them if they're been victims of crime, even though it may not be reported crime. Those are the kinds of things that we are really beginning to, and if you publish it on a regular basis, you'll have some sense of what's happening out there, I think, and I guess I'm willing to leave it the way it is, Senator Shoemaker, because otherwise I think we make more of it than what this bill intends for them to do. So that's the way I stand on it.
Just a question, are all of the crimes that are going to be reported ones that the reporting agency is told about by a victim?
Sometimes, not always.
I mean, sometimes it's going to be a crime that they learn about from a witness to the crime.
Fine, then I think that's fine.
How does
that's about the one way you
Or they find somebody that's been killed.
Well, that's why I want to leave it the way it says, motivated by prejudice, so it doesn't make any difference who reports. It's a question of how it gets there, and they're going to bring it in.
Well, it seems to impose an absolute standard, though, that really you shouldn't be reporting it unless you know that it was motivated by prejudice.
I see it the other way around. Sit and rock.
What do they do now? What does a police officer do now if he suspects that this was a racially or sexual-oriented assault, for example? What do they do now?
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, there's no, it would be reported in, as far as the crime statistics program goes, just as an assault or whatever type of crime it was.
There's nothing in the report
none of
that
this information
fills out that says that, you know, this is another one of those that's going on in this neighborhood or something like that?
It probably would be on the officer's individual report, but that detail doesn't come to the state crime reporting program.
The cops are going to love this girl.
They didn't and so that's why I think they're going to return it in to the extent to which they care. Senator Gretzky.
I think that this is just a question of how valuable is this going to be. What we're trying to do is just get some idea what's going on. We're not trying to create some kind of new burden that the police officer has to jump through. And I think you see reasonably believes, and you're just asking for problems. Red flags are going to go up, and somebody's going to come in here and begin wondering what that standard means, and have we met that standard. And the victim comes in and gets a copy of a police report, looks at the statute, and his lawyer ends up suing him for slander because there wasn't reasonable belief, and he's now accusing this person of committing a crime that was racially motivated. And I just think I agree, the more I think about it, I think Senator Cohen has got the right idea. Let's just leave it the way it is. Maybe it'll give us some useful information. Maybe it won't, but it's worth a try.
Okay, I don't feel strong enough about it to push it any further.
I move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 606.
Senator Hillis moved -3 amendment to Senate Bill 606. Objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 606 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Hale moved Senate Bill 606 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Brockman?
Aye.
Gransky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. We do all want to be recorded on Senate Bill 606, Senator Springer.
Yep.
If you don't need me, I'll...
This is a reporting of...
hate crimes. How do you deal with the sexual orientation in that one? Or did we?
It's okay.
Oh, yeah, it's in there.
Good. I'd like to be recorded as an I vote.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got one bill left. A quick one that goes to Ways and Means, folks.
Yay.
We're glad you arrived. Yeah. We're going to spend 2 minutes on it.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Jack, we have some additional comments or communications. Yeah. Senate Bill 833.
Just for the hell of it.
Just so you can look at it.
This is the bill that's at... the request of Justice Jones, you'll recall it deals with telecommunicated warrants. There was some discussion at the public hearing about limiting the bill to the pilot project that was mentioned. The chair and myself had some discussions with Justice Jones. He felt that would cause some constitutional problems. So we have no amendments to the bill. You should have received a letter from Justice Jones as well asking that it be referred to Ways and Means, since they're asking for an amount of money of $403,000.
That's just for the pilot program, Jim?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
There was another problem during the debate on the bill, and that has to do with Section 6, which appears near the bottom of page 3, line 30. Remember, it says now that a search warrant may be issued only by a judge of the district or circuit court and may be executed anywhere in the state. We had testimony from municipal judges that it left them out of a very important part of their process. Since we limited it to district or circuit courts, there also was testimony that there would be some judges who could be found within the state who would be very prone to issue warrants without really investigating whether there's any basis for them, and the lawyers would find, you know, they'd learn who these judges were, and pretty soon you'd have these permissive judges being the ones issuing all of these warrants. And I suggested that, and I posed to Justice Lindy, what if we were to permit a panel of judges appointed by the Supreme Court to have the statewide jurisdiction to issue these warrants? He thought that would be a good idea and a manageable thing to do. So that you'd have judges throughout the state appointed by the Supreme Court who would be available by telephone to issue these warrants. And except for them, the warrants would continue to be issued as they are today.
We have had discussion that you couldn't have a double way of, you can't have one, that would be a violation of the, 14th? Is it the 14th?
Privileges and immunities clauses or what? Yeah. Is the discretion.
You couldn't have both.
Oh.
They said.
So that won't work.
So that part wouldn't work. The only thing you could do is do six. If you wanted to include municipals here, with respect to section six, we could add municipal court judges and what else, Jack?
Justice
of the peace. So that you could add those two back in, and that's probably what we ought to do, folks, if you want to, I don't know, if you care about that.
The effect of that that we might want to discuss is that we have to be careful that we didn't add them just into the language as it is, so that the warrants can be executed anywhere in the state, unless, of course, that's the committee's desire. But I don't think the committee wants to have justices of the peace issuing statewide warrants.
No.
It's a no.
Well, I don't know. We're going to do something for Brockman on his justice of the peace tomorrow.
I don't know.
Well, the bill is on its way to Ways and Means, folks, there are people in the audience who want to comment on it. We have found out that we can't amend it in a way that we thought we could with respect to the double, the two-tiered kind of operation, which is, so we're either left with, I think Section 6 the way it is, we could, in fact, add in municipal court judges if we wanted to there.
There is language down in line 37 through 40, which is deleted, but which we could reinsert, which deals with search warrants issued by justices of the peace and municipal judges and limiting it to the county or the municipality in which the court is located. We could reinsert that language.
The problem, though, is then you run into the conflict, I think, that Justice Jones...
The same dang thing again.
Right. At least that's my understanding of it. So maybe we ought to just decide to send it on the way to Ways and Means as it stands. Since we're running into the various Supreme Court justices and their... Senator Brinsky.
Senator Brockman has pointed out something. Apparently, justices of the peace can execute search warrants now. Look at line 37 on 3. Deleted language says a search warrant issued by a justice of the peace may only be executed within the county in which the justice court is located.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And that is correct, but the two-tiered problem that the chair has been relating is the fact that with this bill we would have the regular judges subject to this telecommunication warrant process, and the justices of the peace and municipal court judges would not be, and that creates some constitutional problems.
I understand, but I didn't know justices of the peace could execute search warrants.
Okay, folks.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 833 to the Ways and Means Committee to do pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved Senate Bill 833 to Ways and Means for the do pass recommendation. Discussion.
Madam Chair, I just, sorry to be here a little bit late, but I want to
make sure, the bill as in its current form does permit statewide utilization of judges.
Yes.
And the judge shopping that, I mean, I know that takes place in Multnomah County already.
Would be out of it. Not.
So this bill takes that out? No statewide judicial reach?
Oh, it would be statewide.
There would be statewide,
and okay. You wouldn't necessarily have the shopping capability.
Say again?
You wouldn't necessarily have the shopping capability any longer.
How is that dealt with?
Even better.
Well, you don't know who you're getting when you apply. Through this process, you don't know the judge you're going to get hold of.
Okay.
So you would have, they would be essentially the panel, a statewide panel.
Of all the district and circuit judges, well, yeah. Period, in the report. That's what they do. Okay.
Is that,
okay.
Was that an amendment that we've adopted, or?
The language of the bill says a search warrant may be issued only by a judge of the district or circuit court and may be executed anywhere in the state. So it does allow for judge shopping. So you can go to a district court judge in Lane County, and I can get a search warrant for Jackson County if I want to, under this bill.
No more so than you presently can. As I understood Justice Jones's testimony, was that with the telecommunication system that is set up, you would not know, if you utilize the new method, you would not know who you're going to get a hold of.
So I can go to a judge right now and do that?
When you apply for a search warrant under present law?
I can go up to any county I want and get a search warrant for Jackson County.
I'm not sure if you can go to any county. You can go to any judge within the county.
Well, the way this language reads here now, I can go to any county because it says may be executed anywhere in the state. And it doesn't limit it to telecommunicated search warrants.
It says under Section 1 to 5 of this Act.
Well, I'm referring
maybe
to
you're right. One
Section
to
6 on page 3 there.
Right, that's
sub 1. That was the concern Senator Springer had before. It's the same deal.
I think you're correct, Senator Vinsky.
Well,
I bring it up only for purposes of clarification. It doesn't bother me, but I know Senator Springer was confused and I didn't want him voting on it,
sure.
Thinking it was different than it was.
Well, I don't want to hold the committee up. If that's still in the bill, then I'm a no. Unless we want to see the telecommunication cost occur.